Does face recognition technology breach your rights? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vishala Sripathma, filling in for Anu Anand. Good morning. Facial recognition can be a valuable tool for tackling crime, but a legal challenge in the UK today likens the technology to taking DNA without consent. Cameras capture the faces of people, creating a biometric map so individuals can be identified. The challenge comes just days after San Francisco banned the technology. Ed Bridges, who is bringing the UK case forward, says there needs to be stronger regulation.
For me, the most important thing with the use of this technology, as I say, is that it's unregulated. If you're in a crowd at a football match or a concert and the police take photographs of you or video footage, you have rights over how that data is managed and handled. The difference with facial recognition technology is that it exists in a regulatory vacuum. And one of the things that we're hoping to achieve is by making sure that there is a clear message sent to police forces and government that this technology needs to be regulated in order that the public can have confidence over it.
That was Ed Bridges. Let's do the numbers. Traders in China have welcomed Washington's decision to allow US companies to keep doing business with Huawei for the next 3 months. The Shanghai Composite Index has gained more than 1%, and there are gains in South Korea and Australia markets as well. Global growth still isn't good enough to raise living standards. That's according to the latest economic outlook from the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development. It expects trade tensions, a slowdown in Chinese growth, plus volatility in the financial markets to take its toll on the global economy. It's lowered its forecast for global growth to 3.2% this year. Lawrence Boone is the OECD's chief economist. She says growth is still being fueled by low interest rates.
Global growth is weak and still dependent, which is why we shouldn't let trade tensions escalate and disrupt the recovery that we have been building up.
And so where would you say the bright spots are in the global economy?
So the bright spot, definitely the labour market, which continues to recover. Unemployment rates are at historic low. Wage growth is starting to pick up. There's still some more that can be done because participation rates is still not at pre-crisis level, meaning some people had left the labour market in the crisis and they still haven't come back.
And in terms of weak spots, where would you say they are?
So I would highlight first trade tension. And again, we know it's created a lot of uncertainty. It has hurt investment and the manufacturing sector really hard. The second weak spot is China. China's growth has been slowing, and that's normal as they're rebalancing away from an export-driven development model to something that's more consumption-driven. But it's always difficult to do this rebalancing act, and we know that the Chinese authorities have been using lots of fiscal and monetary support and will continue to monitor because the effects are quite uncertain at this stage.
That was Lawrence Boone. Ahead of the European parliamentary elections this week, we've spoken to two politicians on opposite sides of the continent to ask what is the future of Europe. First, a man who led the Eurozone's third largest economy. Former Italian Prime Minister Paolo Gentiloni feels that although Brexit may have sent political shivers across the European Union for countries like Italy, it's strengthened their belief in the European project.
I'm Paolo Gentiloni, I'm the former Italian Prime Minister. There is a reaction, at least in Italy for sure, after the referendum, after Brexit, of worry about where a anti-EU position could bring our country and, in general, European countries. So it is something paradoxical, but the British referendum contributed to enhance the pro-European tendencies in Europe. We need to move in Europe because staying where we are is perhaps not sufficient to face the danger of nationalism and the coming back of the Euroscepticism that we had 4 or 5 years ago, much stronger than now. To move ahead means to have clear goals. We have to decide to make progress with the main part, the strongest part, the more committed part of Europe, keeping our doors open to all the member states, but not to waiting to move on common defense, on common migration policy. So we have to move, and we have to be very clear towards member states like Hungary or Poland, for example, that are very reluctant to common commitments, for example, on migration policies, that you can't have the best part of the EU project and avoid any common commitment. There is not a Europe à la carte that you can decide in your own to accept or to refuse.
That was Paolo Gentiloni, Italy's former Prime Minister. And just before we go, Game of Thrones fans should spare a thought for Chinese fans. The finale was blocked in China because of the trade war. In London, I'm Vishala Sripathma with the Marketplace Morning Report for the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.